Welcome to the Cyan of Regan podcast. I am one of your hosts, Cyan of Flame.
And I'm Sarahead Regan.
Our podcast here is basically us conversing about all of our favorite topics and hobbies, and one of those is definitely professional wrestling. We're going to be talking about the brilliant NXT special episode, TakeOver Rival, which just took place about a week ago.
February 11th, 2015.
Fantastic setup. It had Hideo Itami face Tyler Breeze, Baron Corbin facing Bull Dempsey in a no disqualification match. Tag team titles were defended between defending champions Blake and Murphy versus the Lucha Dragons, the former champions. A singles match for the number one contendership for the NXT title, Finn Balor versus Adrian Neville. A fatal four-way title match for the NXT Women's Championship. Between Charlotte, Sasha Banks, Bayley, and Becky Lynch. And a one-on-one grudge match for the NXT Championship of Sami Zayn defending against Kevin Owens. We'll go into detail on each one of these matches, but we just kind of want to lay the floor for this entire setup. Fantastic show all the way through. How'd you feel about the gaming for it, Regan?
Because we just started 2015, so we can't call it like the best pay-per-view or the best NXT event of the year. But man, if we would have to compare it against the other ones, like it was pretty solid. It not quite the best one, if only because of the tag match and one of the Baron Corbin versus Bo Dempsey, I don't think was what it could have been. But still, we're talking about in a card of, what, six matches? We had four solid matches. That's a pretty good percentage in a wrestling show.
Mm-hmm.
So I loved it. I loved everything about it. I loved the ending, which we'll talk about when we get to that. But I loved how they sort of painted themselves in the corner because, you know, Kevin Owens getting a title shot was kind of it was too fast. But I like how they went around it, mm-hmm. with the way it finished. And again, when we get to that, we'll talk about that.
Well, kind of going back to the very beginning of it and everything, we had Hideo Itami in the first match fighting against Tyler Breeze. Tyler Breeze, known as Prince Pretty, he is, you know, a selfie-obsessed, vapid supermodel who...
That selfie stick.
Oh yeah, he finally has a selfie stick.
Yeah, he has a selfie stick, and it has the what do you call his boots? What's on his boots? I can't remember like what that fabric is called.
Oh, yeah, he's got the big hairy boots. Like
yeah, he has like it's fur,
like
right?
Raccoon skin, like just fur.
Yeah, it's like raccoon skin, and the selfie stick has the same skin. It's the same fur on it, which is hilarious.
I really like Tyler Breeze, and I think they kind of pushed him to be a little more serious in the build-up for this match when he was facing off, when he attacked Hideo Itami kind of in a rage that Itami wasn't going into the number one contendership match,
mm-hmm.
Because of the fact that he felt that looked badly on him.
Right.
Like, how could I lose to somebody who also lost, type thing, which I thought was a pretty interesting kind of grudge to have.
Right.
You don't really see that quite too often.
Right.
So that was one of the really nice things about this match.
There was a story behind the match? What?
What? And in the match.
Yeah.
I believe, and he does it a little bit, but they really need to play up, especially my only complaint about this match was it went a decent amount of time, but you got somebody like Hideo Itami, the former Kenta, who has tremendous kicks. You know, him, Daniel Bryan and everything. Lots of really good kickers out there and everything, but he's very good at kicking. You need to have him take some kicks where he tries to kick Tyler Breeze's head off. Like,
right.
Because when somebody's obsessed with selfies and a supermodel and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, mess his face up, yeah.
You've got to put a threat that they're going to hit him in the face. Like, that's the thing that Miz does brilliantly. They've actually kind of dialed that down a little bit now. But
yeah, and I know old school heels like Ric Flair during his actual Nature Boy persona, yep, when he was actually, yep, you know, very in love with his appearance. The model Rick Martel used to do that too. Mm-hmm. We just saw a match with him not long ago, that Survivor Series match. And there's another character that did it recently, actually. And you're right. It just dawned on me that they don't do that enough with Tyler Breeze.
They don't
book the matches. Enough. Yeah, they don't book it so that the face is trying to actively mess his face up and him trying to defend it. He doesn't do it enough. I think that would add an extra layer to the character.
Him being a little more cowardly and trying to get away from being hit in the face would do a lot for making Tyler Breeze a hateable, more cowardly type of heel. Not that all heels have to be cowards, because I think that's a little overdone.
Yeah, that's a little overdone, but for his character, he has to be afraid of losing his looks, because
yep,
like, that's the whole character. The whole character is that he calls everyone uggos and he takes selfies. So, yeah, that's right. Cody Rhodes, he's the one who did it recently when he had the mask.
He did it previous to Miz, but.
That's the one I was thinking of.
But Cody Rhodes, yeah, when he was dashing, he would always do that. And then he finally got kicked in the face, and it had to an amazing evil turn with Dr. Doom. Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah. So you're right. I rewatched the match, and I liked the match, but now that you told me about this, and there's that layer that's not in the match, I don't know if I enjoyed it nearly as much. Now, I kind of want this to be a thing.
Yeah, so I think they're not done with Hideo Itami and Tyler Breeze. There's still something they can do over a couple more weeks with them on NXT programs. And, I mean, Tyler Breeze is still very, very good, so he could definitely move up in there. And, of course, Hideo Itami's great. We had another GTSDs.
That's right. We did, huh?
I love the way that they're doing that. And I hope he doesn't hit it until he wins the title. He can get like Kevin Owens on his shoulders or whoever's champion at that time. And he finally hits his GTS. That would be
fantastic. I want the GTS to be used once in a blue moon, especially his GTS, because his GTS is pretty brutal looking. Like, I don't think Hideo's, Itami's, or Kenta's, whatever you want to use them, his GTS should be used as much as the CM Punk GTS was used. I think it has to be used sporadically. Make it the knockout that it is, instead of using it over and over. Because the way he does it, it looks like he's killing someone with it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Now, just at the moment, I can't recall exactly how did Hideo Itami pick up the win?
I'm trying to remember if it was a... It wasn't a kick. What was...
I thought it was a big kick to the head, but I...
Maybe it was.
I was missing something.
No, I think you're right. I think it was a big kick to the head, because it wasn't the GTS, because, again, they've teased it, but he hasn't done it. And I can't think of any other move that he does that would been, like, a finisher. I just remember it being kind of like a knockout.
Against Hideo. So they didn't play enough on the Tyler side that he fears the shots to the face, but he very much has a finisher. He has his beauty shot.
Right.
But you have Hideo Itami, who should have the GTS but doesn't, and sort of has the stomp as a finisher, but that's really just like when he's tagging with Finn Balor, because that's more Balor's thing.
Right.
So he's kind of at a point where he's one of the top guys, like, featured majorly for the last, 4 months? In mm-hmm. NXT storylines, but not quite, like, he doesn't have a finisher. So it's kind of interesting to see somebody like that. Like, you've got Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn's got the Paloma kick is kind of his finish off.
Right.
Or he's also got that, like, imploder, I think they call it the imploder suplex, where he gets kind of like a...
What is
kind of
Balor's...
like an underhook under the leg and over the other side of the head, and he does a suplex,
right.
Like, almost a fisherman, but not quite. I think they call it imploder suplex, and it's really cool. What is Balor's finisher? Is that what you're saying?
No. I was thinking of Hideo Itami, and yeah, you're right. It's the corkscrew roundhouse kick is the finisher. That's what it was. That's his finisher currently as Hideo.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Yeah, as Hideo Itami, that's his finisher. As Kenta, it was the single leg running high knee, which is the Daniel Bryan kick. He also has a cross face called the Game Over, and then the Go to Sleep, which is obviously he originated that.
No, he needs to bring the Game Over in, because I've always felt that you're not a complete solid package as
unless you have a
major wrestler, unless you have a submission finisher and a KO finisher.
Yeah.
Both.
Yeah, and I agree.
And that's Randy Orton's one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. That's my only knock against
him. Yeah,
I hate that he does not have a submission.
Yeah, his submission has always been, honestly, the only time he's kind of hinted at a submission that he uses a lot has been just like a sleeper hold, like a basic sleeper hold. That's the only thing I've ever seen him do continuously that would be considered one, and that's a really shitty one.
And even then, like, I don't think he's ever won via sleeper. Like,
yeah.
Like Dolph Ziggler for a while.
Yeah, he had the sleeper hold.
They were trying to give him as like the guy who would like put you to sleep. Put you to sleep, but use the sleeper. But even that has disappeared, for better or worse. That's one of the interesting
things.
Did
you know? I didn't know this. There's two variations of the go to sleep as Kenta that he did. He's got the go to sleep, which is the one we know, the CM Punk one. And then there's the Ura go to sleep, which is apparently an Argentine backbreaker rack. So it's backwards. So he's holding them in a back rack, and then he drops them on the back of their neck. So instead of their face, he drops them on the neck.
I don't think he should do that.
I'm just saying, though, if he starts doing GTS and he does the back one, like, that's going to look like he's murdering people.
That's pretty scary.
Yeah. Yeah, the Ura, they should call that the Ultra go to sleep. Like, maybe that's what Ura means in Japanese. I don't know.
No, Ura means reverse.
Okay, so yeah, so Ura.
So back of the head rather than...
Yeah, he's holding him in a back rack. Like, he has him in a back rack, and then he drops him on the back, like on his knee, but with their face away from the knee. So he's not hitting them in the face. He's hitting them on the back of the knee. That sounds super dangerous.
Yeah.
I kind of want that.
I'm not so sure I'm on board with that one.
I'm all on board.
But he's good enough that he could do it, but I want him to use regular go to sleep before he starts doing like these variations. Cause that spot, man, that spot when he holds him up and the crowd knows it. I think there's enough NXT fan base that are smarks that they know it's coming and they want it. And
oh yeah, I mean, the R Evolution when Finn Balor and Hideo Itami took on the Ascension. Remember the pop for Hideo when he almost did the GTS, and then what was it? Connor stopped him. One of them got beat under him, and you know,
yeah, Victor pulled Connor off.
Victor pulled Connor off, and you know, people were like, "Boo!" So I mean, they know the GTS is coming. They know it's a move that he does. Like they're well aware of who he is, you know, as Kenta. So I think when it does happen, they're gonna need to do that outside of NXT or like during his final match. Because otherwise, you know, they're going to blow the roof of that place.
Absolutely. So, yeah,
decent match. You know, not the best match of the card, but decent enough so that it didn't stink up the pay-per-view at all. Like, I think there's only two matches here that stunk up the place.
And one of the things, it was a good match. I mean, I wouldn't put any knocks against it besides those two small things that Hideo needs a more defined finisher to be used, and that... You need to do more of the cowardly face protection on Tyler Breeze's side.
Yeah.
But I do really respect that you see more and more promo work and speaking coming from Hideo little by little and everything. And
Hideo, when you say Hideo, I think hideous. Like, oh, it sounds like you're calling him an uggo.
No, he's Ooh, how did they not use that in that feud?
Right?
See, now the feud has to go. Hideo, more like Hideous.
Hideous, yeah, like...
yeah, like...
How is that? Yeah, how has it happened?
How has that not been used? Very good point.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have never seen another wrestler come straight from Japan to America to be in the WWE and actually be taking steps of showing the English that, like, I want to be, like, a top guy. Like I loved Yoshitatsu. I thought Yoshitatsu was awesome. And he did really, really good matches. But, like, there was never a point where it seemed like he really wanted to become a main guy, any sort of, like, a title holder, because he never tried to shoot a promo or, like, talk.
And I think that comes from the fact that Hideo has been used to being a main eventer, and he's been a talker in Japan, so, like, he's used to being a talker over there, so, like, when he comes here and he's not allowed to speak, because obviously he, you know, he knows little English, or not enough to, you know, do a good promo, he obviously wants to break that. I think he wants to break that mold, like you said, like, he wants not to be that, the Japanese wrestler that can't speak English. I think he wants to be the Japanese wrestler that can wrestle and speak English.
Exactly.
And carry himself.
Like, I would say, arguably, Tajiri, of all Japanese wrestlers, got the most over and everything, and he still never really talked. Like, they kind of played him as kind of a joke at once he kind of teamed up with William Regal as his mouthpiece.
Yeah.
But I see a lot of upwards for Hideo Itami.
Plus, if we're going to believe the report about the NXT people that are part of a certain clique, then maybe, and we'll talk about that a little later, but maybe he's been hanging with them and maybe they've been trying to teach him, like, you know, basic things, you know, for promo work and the language itself, so.
I think in general he's probably just using some Rosetta Stone or something like that. Like, you know WWE, like, $500 for a Rosetta Stone pack is nothing.
Like, whatever,
so, like,
yeah.
They would totally, like, oh, you're actually interested in this? Cool.
Yeah.
Done. Fine. Like,
whoa. I'm really hoping he's trying at least, so that he at least can work the crowd. Yeah.
Yeah. That's going to be his main obstacle, because everything else, he's pretty much got it. Like,
yeah.
He has the finisher, he just needs to, you know, show it to the crowd.
And not only that, but I think he must have some good grasp of the language, because, I mean, when you're in a ring and you have to call shots, you know, like, because Tyler Breeze doesn't strike me as a guy who would lead a match, at least not what I've seen so far. So Hideo obviously was kind of leading the match, and he has to tell him, you know, hey, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. So obviously he knows enough basic English so that he won't have the Sin Cara problem, because Sin Cara couldn't call a match to save his life because he didn't know the language at all.
Yeah, he would only call a match in Spanish, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, and that's why they had him work with, like, you know, Rey Mysterio, so he could be the kind of like the filter for the other wrestlers so that they would be like, okay, cool, this is the spot we're doing. Because Rey Mysterio would relay the messages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I know some of those wrestlers that he was in there with early probably knew some Japanese. Like Finn Balor, like, he has to know some Japanese to pass because he spent so much time in Japan and working all those different territories.
Oh, yeah, Balor definitely knows the language.
Yeah. You know, Tenzai is probably giving him those tips and everything.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, Albert. That's right.
Because Albert loves him some Japan.
Yeah. he worked there for how long? Six, 7 years after he left the WWE?
Oh, I mean, off and on, because, I mean, he had the time in Japan, and then he went back and everything. And something I never knew was, actually, JBL knows a little bit of Japanese. He did an interview. He was talking about how he knows a little bit because he loved working over there for years.
I wouldn't doubt it.
And Hulk Hogan, I don't know that he ever, like, learned much of it, but, like, he loved working in Japan, too. So, like, all sorts of different eras and everything. Like, Japan's always had a vibrant love for pro wrestling.
Yeah.
Well, the following match, a little bit different. It was I think a brilliant build until they finally clashed. But the Baron Corbin Bull Dempsey feud of the two undefeated people and everything, and then Baron Corbin finally beat him. And I thought it was actually a potential botch in the match of Baron Corbin versus Adrian Neville. So they were in the qualifier for whoever was going to go on to be in the number one contendership match. And Baron Corbin had a build on the TV that he'd never lost a match. He'd won like every single one. And so Adrian Neville was going to be his first like true challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a spot where like Neville's got him beat, but he's also like getting kind of thrown around by Baron Corbin. And Baron Corbin's on the outside. He gets attacked when the ref's not looking by Bull Dempsey, and the ref's counting 9, and Baron Corbin barely makes it in at the 9. I feel like he was supposed to make it in after the 10 and get counted out by loss so that he wouldn't have the pinfall loss, and they just had to call an audible and have Neville immediately hit Red Arrow, because it just seemed a bit off. How did that feel to you?
I don't know. This whole match, before we go into that, like, Baron Corbin versus Bull Dempsey, this is, what, the second time they fought, right? Because you already beat him, like, soundly beat him
twice. This is three
squash
in a row.
Matches. Yeah, like, he basically squash matches against Bull Dempsey. Like, Bull Dempsey's was being built as this wrecking ball that could kill everything. Like, you know, like a Fat Goldberg, basically. It's the way it was sold to us, right? Before he fought Baron Corbin. Baron Corbin has been sold as, like, the lone wolf guy that's really strong, no one can stop him, blah, 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 whatever. So they have this match, non-DQ. One, they didn't even use weapons. You said there was a chair that, what was it, Bull was bringing in?
Bull grabs a chair at the very end.
And, right, so he...
And is trying to swing it, and Corbin grabs him instead of the chair and hits his finisher and wins. So I don't think a weapon was even used at all, like, besides being thrown into, like, the steps outside.
So, yeah, I don't get that. So it's a non-DQ match, and, like, they really didn't do anything to play off the non-DQ rule. Like, all they did is they fought outside, what, 2 minutes? Like, the whole match is 4 minutes and 15 minutes long, or 4 minutes and 15 seconds long. Like, they had 2 minutes outside where he hit him with the steel steps or whatever, and I think maybe the steel post, I think. And then they went inside and had a regular match, and you said he grabbed the chair and then, you know, got suckered in into the finisher, and that was it.
Yep.
So, I mean, I didn't even notice, like, the botch or anything. It just, I was very, very disappointed. This is the stinker of the show. Like, mostly because I don't understand what the point of a character like Bull Dempsey is. Like, if he's supposed to be this monster that they say he is, then how come all he's done has been chumped by Baron Corbin for the past, like, what, 2 months? Month and a half?
About that long. And I mean, you built him up that he's the wrecking ball and that Baron Corbin is the finish machine. Like, Baron Corbin's whole thing was, for the longest time, they would start counting as soon as the match started, because in, you know, 30 seconds or less, he's going to hit end of days and beat the guy. Bull Dempsey, like, he's bull. He's going to come out and he's going to beat up the other guy. Like, he's just going to devastate them and everything. So these two forces colliding should have been something special and kind of like a back and forth potentially. And I mean, just on looks, like, most likely they were probably going to go with Baron Corbin, but for them to go with Baron Corbin three in a row, it doesn't make Baron Corbin look any stronger to do it three times in a row. It just makes Bull look weaker.
Yeah. Like that's what I'm saying. Like Bull.
Oh, so Bull was just another guy.
Bull, like, comes off as a joke. Like, I mean, cause he already has like the very basic, like, old school wrestler look, which is fine. Like, I don't mind that he looks kind of like a hairy King Kong Bundy or George the Animal Steel. I don't mind that. There's room for that. But if you're going to make light of that and then say that he's a monster and that he's supposed to, like, take, you know, like, beat people and wreck their people and whatever, and then you don't, all you have is him losing, convincingly, solidly losing to this other guy, then what's the point of him? Like, what's the point of him existing, basically? Like, I don't get it.
Ouch. I got a little mean.
I'm just saying, like, as a character, he makes no sense to me. Absolutely no sense. Like, I was kind of on the Bull Dempsey, like, I was on the Bull Dempsey train for a while. Like, I was like, yeah, like, I kind of like this cat. I like the character. I like what they're trying to do, bring back that type of old school wrestler.
You know, I liked that too, and I thought he actually had a strange kind of real coolness. I mean, obviously, once he comes out and, like, he's got, like, his hair all jacked up for the match, and he's wearing, like, that singlet and everything like that, because of the fact that he's, like, you know, a round wrecking ball type dude and everything like that, he doesn't look all that impressive. It's the beating that he delivers. But when they were doing these, like, promo pieces where he would be wearing, like, a track suit and everything that kind of had him wear down, and he would have his hair, like, slicked back all nice and everything, I'm like, well, this dude's kind of got a little bit cool to him. Like, this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Like, I started becoming a fan of him. And then just three in a row, and it's like, okay, like, is he going to rebuild? Or is
not,
this
like,
just it for him?
Like,
I don't get what you can do with him after this.
Yeah, exactly. Like, to me, he's done. Like unless they repackage him, unless they have him beat everyone now for like a year or like 6 months. Okay, let's say 6 months, like, where he beats everyone he's ever fought and Baron Corbin just becomes like this thing that he's never been able to overcome, then maybe I'm okay with it. Maybe I'm on board with it. But if he doesn't come off as convincingly dominant in the next 6 months against everyone that they put in front of him, then his character's dead. Like, they just committed character suicide.
A little bit.
So.
And
again, this was the sinker.
I still think that there was a big problem with that qualifying match that Baron Corbin had with Adrian Neville, though, because I don't understand why you would want, why would you have the spot where Bull attacks him and he almost gets counted out instead of having him get counted out.
Yeah.
And he loses his first pinfall loss and everything like that. It just didn't make sense to me. It would be like Rusev could have been counted out, but he actually gets pinned in a match. It's like, no, like, the whole thing is you drag out his undefeated pin loss as long as possible.
Right.
Yeah. I just thought that was such a waste for that too. But I mean, good for Neville because he broke the streak.
Yeah.
And Neville is the man of gravity, forgot, and absolutely amazing. But the next match was the tag team with the best theme music versus the tag team with the most womp womp theme music.
Womp
womp womp womp. Blick and Murphy are the tag team champions, and they are facing the Lucha Dragons, Kalisto and Sin Cara. This match should have been better than it was.
Yeah, I'm gonna just go ahead and say it. The reason why it wasn't better was because Blake and Murphy were in it. Like, I don't get them. I don't get them as characters. I don't get them as wrestlers. I don't see the appeal. I have no idea why they have the titles. Like, Blake and Murphy to me are the Heath Slater of NXT.
Both of them.
Combined, yeah.
The Heath Slater and the
No, they're just Heat. Both of them are Heat Slater to me. That's how disinterested I am in them. Like, Blake, dude, they're so vanilla. Like, other than their theme song being hilarious, that womp, 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 like, that's the only thing about them that I like, and it's that I like it ironically.
You like it to laugh at it.
Yeah, like, I'm laughing at it. Like, I'm not with it. I don't like it. I just laugh at it, and it makes me like it because it's funny. But I just don't understand how you went from having the Ascension, right? 364 days, not 65, because God forbid you give them the full year. Then giving the titles to the Lucha Dragons. And then basically making the Lucha Dragons transitional champions and giving them the title to Blake and Murphy. I don't get it. I really don't get it.
It was a surprisingly short reign for the Lucha Dragons and...
Very short. Like what? A month? 2 months?
The Lucha Dragons lost it so unceremoniously, and they were just beginning to get really over. Like, their matches with the Vaudevillains were really cool, and, like, crowds are starting to really get into the Lucha, Lucha,
yeah.
Like, the chant and everything to prep them up. And then they came in. I won't completely blame Blake and Murphy for the match being bad. They're a large portion of it. But
at least a two-thirds. Let's give them a two-third.
But there was, like, some obvious distraction on the face of the Lucha Dragons, both Kalisto and Sin Cara. Sin Cara a little bit more, it seemed like. Kalisto still landed some good spots, but, I mean, like, there were things, like, coming in for a Hurricanrana, and, like, Murphy doesn't pull in his head, and so, like, you just got Kalisto doing a Hurricanrana to air, and then he just falls, and the crowd, like, completely lost interest as soon as that happened. Like, if you botch, like, a big spot like that, then the crowd's gonna be like, okay, this is weird. And, yeah. And so, like, all of these loose botches that happened throughout this match just devastated it entirely. And the fact that two times in a row they've won by basically the swoop method of just getting a really quick roll up and then fleeing. So this match was the womp womp of the night.
Yeah, this is the, I think, I mean, I really didn't like Baron Corbin versus Bull Dempsey because of how short and pointless it was, but this one was 8 minutes long, so it was kind of like, it was really long and boring, which is saying something for a Lucha Dragons match, because they're far from boring, but it was a boring match, as far as, like, how their other matches were.
And who did the Vaudevillains piss off? Because they're the ones who should have taken those titles.
That's what I want to know. Who did they... Yeah, who did they piss off? Because obviously they pissed someone off.
And I mean, even then, there are other tag teams in the NXT division that we know of that would have been more interesting people to have do a quick upset and take the titles from the Lucha Dragons. Like, I could have gone for Enzo Amore and Big Cass. I would be all about them taking the tag team titles and delivering a bunch of soft promos on the other tag people, Vaudevillains. Who else is there? There's a couple other tag teams. I don't want to go.
Vaudevillains, technically, Hideo and Finn Balor were, you know, a tag team as well. Yeah, Lucha Dragons, Vaudevillains, Ascension left. So that only, yeah. I think Ascension leaving did more harm than good, to be honest.
At least they're doing
like, I really think they should have waited until there was at least two more tag teams that could have taken that spot.
When you're ready, you're ready.
Yeah, I mean, they were ready, but I think it messed up their division on NXT. I really think it did.
A little bit. I mean, there's definitely some misfires going on with that NXT tag team division now, with Blake and Murphy being the champions. I just don't see them representative of.
Because think about it this way: when Paige left the women's division, not Divas division, but when she left the women's division, arguably it got better because of Charlotte as the champ and Sasha Banks and Bayley kind of feuding with her on and off. Because I mean, it's really been Sasha Banks and Bayley feuding actively with Charlotte ever since Paige left. Like, actively, they've been feuding with her. Like, they've been involved with her. And, I mean, that's only three people carrying a division. Yeah, they've had people like Becky Lynch and, I think, Natty Hart. You know, they've had people get involved in matches, but they've had a consistent story since Paige left. So, again, a person can leave NXT and the division can be held together. Can't say the same thing about the tag team division. It seemed like Ascension left and they had no plan whatsoever. Or if they had a plan, it fell apart. Like, it obviously fell apart. And, like you said, Vaudevillains must have pissed someone off because they're not part of that plan anymore.
No. Yeah. Sadly, they just really... They really blew it throughout this match and they confused the crowd to silence. There wasn't any fire, and it was just completely a disappointment.
Yeah.
But the next match
The next three matches, shit.
Very true, very true. But the next match really started that uptick and saved the show heavily. Mm-hmm. Finn Balor for, versus Adrian Neville for the number one contender shot at the end.
And the title. Right person won.
I mean, I don't think there was a wrong person.
I think,
two, but I think Finn needs to.
I was gonna say, I was done with Adrian Neville. Not so much. I'm not done with him completely as a performer. That's not what I'm saying. I think I'm done with him being in the title, picture for a little bit. Like, keep him away for at least like 2-3 months, and then bring him back. But right now, I'm okay with him not being there, because he's been there for a while. You know, he had the almost year long reign, and then he had a couple of matches. He's had what, two championship matches with Sane, and then the four way, right?
Yes.
So he's been involved in the main event position basically for over a year. So I think it's time for him to take a break and maybe have like an actual feud, maybe feud with Baron Corbin. I don't know.
He actually was champion for nearly a year. It was like nine months straight.
Yeah, and then he
won
then
it from Bo Dallas in the ladder match right before WrestleMania. And
yeah, so when the network
Bo Dallas defended, Fatal 4-Way defended. Like, yeah. he was the man who brought the NXT title to relevance, really.
Right. And again, like, it's not that I don't want him in that position, because I mean, if Owens is going to be champ for a long time, then I want an Owens versus Neville match. Like, I want that, obviously. I just don't want it right now. I want other people to have matches in the main event and then bring back Adrian Neville. But as far as Finn Balor versus Adrian Neville goes, like, holy hell, was that a good match.
Oh, wow. I mean, everything that they did. And Adrian Neville, I have never seen a corkscrew moonsault from the second rope, like, just landed so beautiful. I mean, I thought he was just going to do a second rope moonsault, and then he does a corkscrew, like, 360 spin. You have to see it to believe it with some of the things that Adrian Neville does. Like, that dude literally is the man that gravity forgot. Like,
yeah. I love, yeah, his moveset is amazing. I mean, his ring psychology is amazing. And Finn Balor once again bringing the, I don't know if, have they named or have they really said, like, what exactly it is that he's portraying when he comes out,
you know,
dressed up?
You know, there was an interesting thing, on the pre-show.
Okay.
They were running down in the pre-show, about the ideas of, And what they do on the NXT pre-show before these things is they have the entire panel take their picks of who's going to win.
Right.
And Jason Albert, a little bit just completely lost me with some of the, like, I don't know if I want to call it kayfabe or what it was.
Okay.
But he's calling the match and he's like, oh, Adrian Neville, such a powerful person, a champ. That was only, you know, lost against one man over the last year, so good and everything. But Finn Balor, he brings all these tools to the table, but I think Adrian Neville's even stronger. But what if it's the Demon Balor? Wait. So Demon Suit Finn Balor is not the same. Like, that.
Right, so, like, so that, Demon
that's
Balor.
That's literally, like, the Super Saiyan he's got, or, like, like, that's Ichigo with the hollow mask?
Yeah, like, so.
Is this
so
what you're telling me? Like.
So, in the NXT universe, Finn Balor is his second form, is what he's saying.
Demon Balor is his second form.
Demon Balor? Okay, I'm on this. I'm so
yeah,
on
so,
it.
Yeah, so, like, they didn't touch this in the commentary of the actual match. Like, he's sitting there, and he's going on, and Finn Balor, like, he uses the stomp, and the jackhammer suplex and everything, but we don't know all the moves that Demon Balor could have. And I'm like, wait. So this is like Evil Ryu, like new move set.
Oh my god,
is this gonna happen? Like, I'm sitting there completely confused by this promo that they're giving me. I'm like, is this legit? Like, are we going to start stardusting it where it's like Finn Balor and Demon Balor aren't the same guy or something like that?
Well, no, it sounds like it's the same guy, but, like, you know, he's turning Super Saiyan, like, he, or exactly, Hollow, like, Ichigo.
Yeah, he's Hollow Ichigo, or he's like Jin, He's like Kazuya Mishima, like, turning into
demon
or something, like that. That's what I don't get. But I mean, that, whatever it is, if it's just him psyching out his opponent and he wants to look cool for pay-per-view matches, or he actually is a demon at this time.
Yeah, yeah. So kind of like how Bray Wyatt, they always say that he's, whenever he does the, I don't even know if it has a name, when he's upside down, walking, you know, the exorcist walk, basically, they say that he's possessed at that point. Like, they've sold it.
It's a crab walk, but I don't know that they say crab walk.
Okay, so let's call it crab walk, but did you know they've sold it as him being possessed at that moment, right? Like, they've said this before, which I'm okay with. Like, if you're gonna do weird things, like, and have a character that's as out there as Bray Wyatt, I have no problem with the idea that he's possessed when he does that. So if Finn Balor is turning into a demon for his big pay-per-view matches, by all means, sell it as he's a demon during pay-per-view matches. I have no problem with this.
I absolutely love it, and I think it's awesome, and I think it looks cool. And the face paint that they use is on point, absolutely. And his entrance, like the light show that they do, I cannot wait until he's on like a main roster show and they actually give him, you know, fireworks or oh my god, use the legitimate like vats of fire like they do for like a Kane or Undertaker entrance or something like that, like actual fire.
Yeah, I'm sure when he makes it to the main roster. And, well, again, I want to bring back the click thing when we get to the final match, since it's going to involve the old man. But I'm sure that his entrance on the main roster is going to be crazy out there. Just balls to the wall, like fire and fireworks everywhere.
But, like, you know, there's fireworks in a Raw entrance for some people, but there are fireworks in a pay-per-view entrance. Yeah. And then there's fireworks at WrestleMania. like there are different levels. I want to see this dude like crawling down the long ass WrestleMania entrance ramp. I need to see that.
Yeah.
Like
just if anything, the entrance should be tailor made for his crawl. Like make it different that year just so his crawl comes off like different. So it can't be straight. Like, it has to have, like, curves or something, you know?
I actually think they need to make the NXT title be defended on WWE pre-shows. That'd be a great way to make people watch the pre-show.
It's true. I mean, and, I would watch it, but at the same time...
And it's a title that's not... That's unimportant enough in the WWE spectrum, like, for that pay-per-view, that... Like, it would still be pre-show value, but special enough that people would go, like, oh my god, I want to see Kevin Owens defend his belt, like, right now. Like, I'm going to watch the pre-show.
Yeah. I just don't know how I feel about having the NXT title on a pre-show. Like, I understand that...
I mean, the whole show is developmental. Like, the whole show is...
Yeah. Raw. Like, I know the whole show is supposed to be under Raw and under SmackDown, but... I think the pre-show has done more harm than good in the past however long they've had a pre-show. I think 3 years now they've had, like, an actual pre-show. Because they've always seemed to put matches that didn't matter. I know they've defended
the U.S. title.
Yeah, I know, exactly. Well, if you're going to put the NXT title on the line, or NXT tag team titles, or any title, like, on the pre-shows, then you have to come up with a good excuse as to why that title is not being defended in the main show. Because it should be defended on the main show. So you have to come up with a good reason. What's that?
Not the NXT title. The NXT title...
Not NXT. I'm talking about any other title. I hate.
Because I've actually seen cases where they've had the tag team titles, like, change hands on a pre-show, and that's bullshit. That shouldn't happen. That is a pay-per-view match, and it shouldn't have been relegated to dark match status, or pre-show status.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. But I think the NXT guy, like, the top guys, just because I think you simultaneously, if you do that, you get a little bit more of a reason to make it interesting for people to watch the pre-show and see that one match, and not quite so much of just a rehashing of the last month of events, which most of us with the WWE Network are going to have experienced anyways. Because, I mean, we're paying $10 a month. Obviously, we're wrestling fans. But at the same time, you're acclimating your guys who, you know, while, you know, maybe somebody like Balor or a Tommy or Owens and everything, they've traveled around countries and they've been in big venues, but right. they've never been in WWE big venues.
Right, like nothing like WrestleMania, basically.
So you can absolutely have your experience of learning the WWE style and doing camera matches for the camera as well as for the crowd in front of those 400 people at Full Sail and have amazing shows tearing it down for the special episodes like Our Rival. But that's not going to be the same as getting the experience of having that same match in front of, you know, 20,000 or 50,000.
Yeah, I was going to say 50 or 60, you know. And like, everything. What's the WrestleMania 31, how many people fit in that stadium?
Oh, I think like...
It's like 70, isn't it?
It's like 80,000 fit in that
stadium. 80,000 is a lot of fucking people. Exactly. And you know it's going to be full.
Oh, yeah, WrestleMania? WrestleMania. Yeah. All out. Yeah. Especially, I mean, that's like the first event that they're ever going to have in Levi Stadium, I believe.
Oh, that's right.
I don't think the Niners have moved there yet. I think that's brand spanking new.
Oh, my God.
So it's going to look sweet.
Also, the bathrooms might not stink. Nah. Nice. But yeah. So I don't know. I don't know how I feel about the NXT title being defended in pre-show. Like I said, like they have to do something with the pre-show so that it shows me that the NXT title being there is not a smash to the title. Like, I know it's developmental, but I just don't want it to become like, oh, this won't matter. Because that's what happened with the titles that have been defended in the pre-shows. Like, they say, oh, the tag team titles are going to be defended. The Intercontinental title is going to be defended. The U.S. title is going to be defended. And it's like, okay, so those titles don't matter then. That's basically what putting it on the pre-show means to the average fan. So I don't want them to do that to the NXT titles and become something that fans go, oh, well, then it doesn't matter. So, but I do like the idea of the NXT title being defended in a WWE pay-per-view, even if it is the pre-show. So, that being said, Finn Balor,
the match itself,
yeah,
fantastic.
Yeah, like that was the last three matches were so good that any of them could be the match of the night.
Honestly, my only knock on Balor versus Neville was I feel the finish. I feel that, and not just because of the fact, I personally don't think the stomp is like a finish. I think it's more of a setup. Like it's undeniably brutal. Like, oh man, he just stomped on his chest from the top rope. Like, I get it, but it just doesn't have that feel of like you're done to me. I think the finish should have been a pin after countering the red arrow with the knees. Like that twist and being hit with the knees when you're trying to do that should have ended the match right there. That spot was so crazy. I don't know why something as simple as like the knee counter like really did it for me, but like to do it to the red arrow, like
I think it's because of how brutal the landing looked. Like I really think that's what it is, because I remember...
He sold it as, like, he just got impaled. Like,
yeah, which, I mean, think about it. The way he's spinning in the air and he lands on the knees, I mean...
That kind of torque? Yeah.
Yeah, with that kind of torque, I mean, that looks extremely painful. So, and judging from the fact that they had, you know, they fought a little bit. That was what, a good 2-5 minutes more of match after that spot? Was it?
About 5 minutes.
Yeah, so obviously it didn't hurt as much, but I mean, it looked like absolute murder. Because I remember when I saw that spot and I was like, oh my god, did he die just now? Like, is that the finish?
Seriously, like
I thought that would have.
Like,
I
thought that was the finisher, and I think it would have been stronger had they ended the match like that.
And now that I think about it, the stomp being done after that happened actually makes sense. Like it makes sense, like from a ring psychology sense. Like he hurt him
that
in that spot. Yeah, and what? Yeah, like the stump finishing wasn't because the stump is that strong. I think it's because the red arrow into his knees already had a weakened core.
But don't you think it would have looked better, like story aspect and everything, with how strong Adrian Neville has been built up to then?
Yeah.
That you reverse it and you have Balor hit the stomp, injure the stomach, he kicks out, like, oh my god, he kicked out of the stomp, and then or Red Arrow, knees. Oh, after taking the stomp, you have your commentary, you know, actually talking about what happened in the match and everything. And it's like, oh my god, like after taking the stomp earlier to that same section, all the force and everything, you deliver that. And I think that would have been a stronger finish. Just myself, I think that would have taken a, 4-star match and made it, you know, a solid 5-star.
Right, because it is. Oh yeah, this is a solid 4.5. Like, like
very, very good match. Like, there's, I'm not shitting on this match at all. It's a freaking great match.
Yeah, it's just that the finish. Yeah, like finish could have been a little better. Like, it did come kind of out of nowhere. Because when he did the stomp, I thought, okay, cool. Like, he's gonna do the stomp. He's gonna get out of this, and then he's gonna get mad and like do whatever his finisher was.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's like, oh wait, no, the stomp is the finisher. So. Let's go with that then.
Exactly. But while this match was great, it wasn't as great as the boss match that we had to follow it up with.
Such a good... Why are women's matches so good in NXT?
Why so aren't they so good on WWE?
On WWE, I know, and they have the
match
talent.
Altogether, just wow. Like when Becky Lynch is good in a match...
You know it's a good match.
You know, like, you did everything right in the entirety of this match. This match really opened my eyes to a lot of things. I cannot think of a single time in history that I've watched a Fatal 4-Way match that was single pinfall. Fatal 4-Way elimination matches, lots of them have been amazing. Fatal 4-Way single pin match, never have I been impressed by.
Right, this like, match, they're usually too clustery.
It's way too much of a cluster.
Because
this
I think...
This match had the perfect pacing. I think this match was the best Fatal 4-Way.
And I think that comes from the fact that in Fatal 4-Ways, people want to get their spots in, you know? Like, everyone wants to get their spot in, and so they're all competing to get, like, their moves in and, you know, do their high spots and, you know, whatever. Whereas in this one, I think... All of them. I think Sasha, Charlotte, Bailey, Becky, like, I think they all came to an agreement, like, okay, this is how we're going to do it. You know, don't, like, they came to an agreement before they went to the ring, you know, and said, this is how what I'm going to do, this is what I'm going to do, that's what I'm going to do. And I think their communication shows. Like, it shows that it's better communication than a lot of veterans would have.
Because
I can't imagine a four-way with, say, like, Cena, Orton, Lesnar, and I don't know who to put, or Daniel Bryan would probably be the only other name I can put in there right now, where they would all give each other the same amount of time. I think, actually, no, Batista, there we go. I'm going to put Batista in there.
That was a little bit of a diss to Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
But
we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But I think...
You defended them all last episode.
But I think, I honestly think that there's more, they had better communication than most veterans do, because this match was, as you said, it's a Fatal 4-Way that didn't feel like an absolute clusterfuck.
And you know what?
It was
another thing that I know you would appreciate from this, because this is your, like, pet peeve of pet peeves. The power levels were right on the money the entire
time. Everyone performed where everyone should be performing as a character. Like Becky
got smashed for a majority of the match.
Yeah,
she got
exactly.
Her spots in.
Like, she's
good enough to attack, but the weakest of the bunch.
The freaking commentary even made light of it. They're like, well, why is Becky Lynch in this match? Like, that was uttered in the match. Like, they even said, like, she shouldn't, you know, like, how...
Could you imagine her head banging with the title? And her...
Yeah. like they even mentioned that she was way over her head, so to speak. And lo and behold, she was. Like, the character, because she's never been shown to be more than X amount of strength or X amount, you know, like, power level-wise. And same with, like, her story with everyone else is the weakest of all the three stories. Like, she's only joining Sasha Banks to sort of get back at Charlotte and Bayley, but she was trying to get the title herself, which is the story. But Sasha Banks knew, so, like, they sort of took her out, what, like, twice during the match? Where, I mean, she was gone for, like, 5 minutes at a time.
Yeah.
Like, she would be absolutely gone. And it would be Sasha Banks, Charlotte, and Bayley, who they've always portrayed as being pretty much... Like, Sasha Banks and Bayley have been portrayed as even. Whereas Charlotte was kind of, like, the one above the both of them.
Yeah,
like... And that's why there was a lot of...
Like, if you were looking at, like, those, like, power rating charts and everything, and, like Charlotte was 100, like, Bayley and Sasha Banks were, like, 95s.
Right, exactly. Like, yeah. They're always five short, and that's enough, exactly...
They almost can get there when they're one-on-one with Charlotte, but they can't beat her one-on-one.
Yeah, and which is why I like that Sasha Banks, like, basically had Bayley... I mean, Bayley worked Charlotte for a long-ass time, and that belly-to-belly from the top rope was absolutely sickening.
Belly-to-Bayley.
Belly-to-Bayley, yeah. from the top rope.
Oh, my
rope.
Gosh. From the top rope, that spot, and she hit it with, like...
Her whole gusto. Body weight fell
like,
on it,
like,
yeah.
She hit it with some force, man.
Mm-hmm.
She laid that in. That spot was one of my favorite finishers off the top rope that I've seen in a while.
I marked out hard when she did the belly-to-Bayley off the top rope.
When she grabbed her, I was like, there's no way Charlotte doesn't, like, throw a headbutt and everything and break it and, like, push her off or something. Like,
yeah.
There's no way she's doing a... And, like, as they're in the air, I was like, to immortality. Like,
nice.
I just saw it. Like, I was like, this is amazing. That spot was so vicious. And the fact that she did the entire match while wearing Misty's ponytail from Pokemon, like, just upped her in that cuteness level of her being that adorable little fireball. of the NXT women's division. Oh my gosh. But back on Becky Lynch, while she was the whipping boy of the match and the weakest of the bunch and everything, you know, the like rank 80 versus the 295s and the 100. I liked that it actually elevated her because she got in some good shots on some people. And she changed her gear, and that is huge. Like, huge for her presentation, because, like, who the hell wears those flannel pants with, like, the old professor patches all over them? And I didn't understand her character before then. Like, the flash and headbanger that she's got now, like, I get that. And,
yeah.
And she could go somewhere from there. But with what she had before, it was just like, why are you here? And she kind of was like, I do belong here, but I'm not ready. Like,
right. Like, what I want to know, okay, so what's your take on, like, the way, well, obviously, Sasha Banks won the title, which is what you called. You called it. I was like, this ain't going to happen. What was your take on the way the finish happened with Bayley and Sasha basically double-teaming Charlotte for a good portion of the match? They were just, like, beating on her until finally Sasha Banks got the finish.
It wasn't quite that they double-teamed Charlotte. It was that they each got in shots on Charlotte right before each other. Like, Charlotte and Sasha are kind of, like, beating each other up, and Sasha gets her into the corner so that she can do her knee drop, and she just happens to get Becky in there, too, and she did the double knee drop on both of them post in the corner. And then after that is when Bayley does the big belly to Bayley off the top rope and almost gets the win. But, like, what's her face, like, kicks out. And then, you know, Sasha comes in and she does the cross face and ends up getting the win and everything. And it didn't feel like they were trying to work together, but it felt like it did give, at the same time, the image of that they weren't being heels each, even though Sasha is a heel, of the two-on-one aspect, but it still gave the end result of you need both women to beat Charlotte, if that makes any sense. Not sure if it does. But their whole throwdown was absolutely vicious. And the torque, Charlotte is so flexible and able to make submissions look that much more painful than they actually are, because the bending that Sasha had on Charlotte when she put her into the crossface was completely savage. She had her like head almost against her feet at one point. That crossface, like Chris Benoit was looking up and he was like, good crossface.
It was looking up, huh? Nice. Oh man.
Well, we know he's not.
No, yeah. We know he ain't looking down. That's. Oh shit. Oh well. But yeah, like you said, actually, you know what? I think that is the description. That's the word that we're gonna use for this match. Savage. Like this match was for and they don't even call them divas. I mean, they just say NXT Women's Championship. They're not fucking divas. They're women's wrestlers.
Which is something that I would love for Charlotte to come to the main roster.
Like, and say, I'm not a diva.
Win the divas title and like throw it in the trash and say,
oh, so do a repeat.
I'm not
of
a
like,
diva.
Yeah.
Like
women's
I'm
champion.
I'm the women's champion. Type yeah. Thing. Bring back the women's belt. Like
yeah. The one with the actual lineage. Because that's another thing that kind of irritates me. Like the divas champ. I know they got merged. So I know technically the
butterflies.
Yeah. Like whose idea? I want to know whose idea that was. I really do. I really want to know who was the asshole that
wasn't
decided.
Michelle McCool, the first divas champion.
Yeah, she was.
It was probably Michelle McCool.
Like, probably, and Taker's everyone's like,
"Give
like,
her the
well,
goddamn butterfly."
Yeah, Taker's like, "Listen, man, I don't want to hear it when I'm home." Like,
she's getting a butterfly.
Yeah. Oh my god. I really don't understand it. I don't understand how the NXT Women's Championship, at this point, I think it has more prestige. Oh, actually, that's not even like a shocking thought. I mean, it has more prestige in my eyes, and most people's eyes, than the Divas
title. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like, they're.
Well, look at it this way. Do you really think that Sasha Banks couldn't beat Nikki Bella? Like,
right, exactly. Like, yeah, that's the thing. Like
I think Sasha Banks.
I think I think the power levels are all reversed right now for the Divas division. Like the women's championship and the developmental, they seem like they're way better than everything in the main roster. Like even when Paige went there, she got like her power level went down, not up.
I don't know that her power level went down because, I mean, when your first day on the job, you beat AJ Lee and take the title.
Well, like, true, but after, like, I'm talking about, like, after, the long term, it seems like she's regressed quite a bit.
Because she's, you know, losing to the Bellas in tag matches with Natalia or whatever. Yeah. And I mean, I'm not sure exactly what they're doing with Paige, but... This match was definitely the sign. Charlotte only dropped that belt because Charlotte's going to Raw.
Like, yeah.
Charlotte's going to the main roster and soon.
Yeah.
And I think it couldn't be better. And my dream fantasy booking is you have Charlotte go to the main roster, beat up a whole bunch of people, really show that she's the best, bunch of promos on being genetically superior. Right. Tons of heat. Ronda Rousey has her UFC title match and beats Kat Zingano and steps away from UFC for a while like she said she was going to do. And you build a WrestleMania match of Ronda Rousey versus...
Charlotte.
versus Charlotte, and you have Rowdy Roddy Piper in Ronda Rousey's corner, and you have Ric Flair in Charlotte's corner.
Very nice.
That match would sell so much.
I mean, this has to be next year's WrestleMania, because there's no way in hell that you can book this in the last month.
1 month? In 1 month?
I don't think you can book it.
Total road, because Ronda's not going to do every week.
No, but I know. But the Charlotte coming in as dominant, like, I don't think you can do it in a month. Like, this is a one-year plan that you're describing.
I think you can do it in a month.
I know you can do it, but it's shotgun booking. Like, I want this needs to be like a 6-year plan or like a 1-year plan, not 6 years.
If you don't have a shotgun, you're not doing it right, man. I mean, that's all that you need for a booking for something like that. Like, did Big Show matter when he fought Floyd Mayweather?
Hell no.
What?
Yeah, it was all, yeah, I know, but like, Charlotte has to, well, okay, here's why that analogy doesn't work. Charlotte is not in the main roster, and people don't know her the same way that they knew the Big Show for that match. Like, you need to establish her for at least a year.
All you gotta do to say something is Ric Flair's daughter, tons of people beat the club, and then
NXT promos.
Exactly. Done. Like she could be made in the shade in 2 weeks, because Paige was made in 1.
Yeah. She was made in 1, but I think, like I said, it was inconsistent, so now she's just, like, the pale total diva. Like, that's pretty much how it goes.
Well, yeah, because she didn't get to fight Ronda Rousey at WrestleMania. Like, you gotta listen to the booking, man. You gotta listen. This is my dream over here.
But yeah, again, like, if there was a match of the night,
it was Sasha Banks winning the title, because she is the boss.
Yeah, it was, man, like, I mean, having rewatched the last 3 matches, because really, those last 3 matches were the best matches. And Finn Balor versus Adrian Neville is a good match, but this 4-way, though, like, if we're going by work rate, if we're going solely by work rate, then Sasha Banks defeating Charlotte, Bayley, and Becky Lynch, definitely the match of the night.
Oh, yeah.
Solely on work rate.
But story and presentation and oh my god, that video package, though.
Yeah, the video package and did you mark out? I don't know if you're... Okay, because I know you're not a child of the Attitude Era, so I know that this probably doesn't mean anything to you.
Child of the Attitude Era. I'm just not a child of the first year of the Attitude Era.
Okay. So do you mark out the way I mark out when you hear the dun, 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 before a big match?
Yeah.
Okay, so I don't know why that thing drives me insane. Like, when I hear that, I'm like, oh my god, we're going to watch something amazing. And I think this is the first time they've used it in NXT. I don't remember them using it for any of the big matches before. Even Sami Zayn versus Adrian Neville, even the ladder match for the Bo Dallas versus Adrian Neville. I think this is the first time they've used it. And every time I hear it, I can only think of one thing. It's a Triple H match. I think it was Triple H versus The Rock the first time I heard it. So every time I hear that dun, 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 before a big match, before they even do the announcements, I always think of like that moment where... I think they're in MSG. Yeah, I think they're in Madison Square Garden. And they play that. And, I mean, that's, like, one of the better, you know, one of the greatest matches of, like, the Attitude Era. Like, an actual wrestling match, not, like, a botch fest, you know, or a spot fest that they had back then with weapons and shit like that. Mm-hmm. And I remember hearing that. And then the video it was video package, then that. And then I think there was a small video package in between wedged in there. And then they did the actual entrances. And I mean, such a good match. And like you said, that video package. My god, that video package. Like, is it me or did Owens not get portrayed as a heel in that package?
I won't go as far as he wasn't portrayed as a heel, but he was portrayed as a Magneto villain, not like Apocalypse villain. Like, there's a lot of shades of gray. Like, Well, yeah, he did it, but, like, he did it for his family. Like,
right, like,
it said, like, multiple times.
Okay,
like,
okay, so,
like,
so
I don't give a shit about friendship. I need a life for my family.
So Kevin Owens is the Heisenberg of the NXT universe, is what you're saying.
Ooh.
That's who he is.
Baby blue, that's baby. Baby blue.
That's why we like him. Like, we're supposed to hate him, but we're like, ah, but, you know, but like, early Heisenberg.
The whole crowd, like, going, fight, Owens, fight, fight, yeah. Owens, fight, fight,
because,
Owens, fight.
Yeah, because he's
Sami Zayn, who's got, like, levels of over that, like...
He's Daniel Bryan over in NXT.
In, exactly, like, in comparison, like, pound for pound over is, like, a Daniel Bryan level. Man.
Hmm. Like, this match, like... Okay, so let's talk about the finish, because I think the finish
Let's talk about the beginning first.
Besides the video packages and how great they were, and how they were WrestleMania quality.
I mean, that promo, just in general, the, I fight for a price. Like, I said that to myself, like, 100 times, like, leading up to that. I'm like, God damn, that's a good line. And, like, it's like, I did it for my family, like, I've got kids and everything, like, I give a shit about you. I love the whole thing about him, like, and so it's like a likable villain that has, like, a reason to be the way he is.
Yeah.
And then you've got the very beginning, he's already just dominating Sami Zayn's mind and manipulating the crowd at the same time. Because right. Sami Zayn's whole thing is, like, I'm amped up, I need to fight him, I won't fight anybody but him, and I'm coming straight at him from the very, very hit sound of the bell. Bell yeah. starts, he's running at Kevin Owens so that he can put in the force, and Kevin's just going to let him tire himself out. He rolls out of the ring.
Eh. Yeah, which, and again, great
classic
heel.
Classic heel.
Yeah, classic heel where they're like, nope. I love that. I've always loved that. Like, it's such a simple thing that heels do. That gets under people's skin, that it's just great that in 2015 and heels can still do that and still get the reaction, you know, that you're supposed to get.
Yeah, no, that little bit of manipulation was great, but was it just me or was it interesting that while he got volleys, this was very reminiscent of Brock Lesnar versus John Cena at
yeah,
at
and they even mentioned it how there was a lot of domination from Kevin Owens to Sami Zayn, which if you've seen any of like El Generico versus Kevin Steen, like this has happened before, like it like that's the type of match that they're comfortable working where Owens just destroys Zayn, like I mean he'll just absolutely wreck him, but then the comeback match will be. You know, kind of like Cena versus Brock, where Cena came back from that match, you know?
Like, Zayn's going to come out of that hyperbolic time chamber for the rematch.
Right, exactly. Like, yeah. He's going to go train, and he's going to beat him, most likely. If not, at least have an even match, kind of like how Cena did. Like, he might yeah. still lose, but he's going to have a better showing.
Yeah. But, I mean, this was just to really solidify Kevin Owens' place and, like, the brutality that he's willing to go to. Like,
yeah.
He's there to fight, win, and take championships. Like,
right, like, he's like the Brock Lesnar light. I mean, he's the NXT's version of Brock Lesnar. Like, he's the monster.
Let's not call Kevin Owens light by any means.
Well, compared to Brock, let's say. I mean, Brock, he probably looks like a child compared to Brock.
Anybody looks a child next to Brock. But.
Right, yeah. But no, but Kevin Owens, like, I mean, I know what they're doing. Like, I mean, the booking, it's great booking. And I said, because I know a lot of people were mad at the ending, how, for those that didn't watch it or just are curious about our take on it, basically Kevin Owens power bombs Sami Zayn a good 3-4 times. And medical assistant comes out because of all the beating he's taken. And then he keeps power bombing him, like, after... The doctors are out trying to figure out if they should keep the match going. And, I mean, the referee at one point just has to make the call, as a real referee in, like, a UFC match would have to, of stopping the fight. Which, again, doesn't happen often. This is not a finish that really happens often in pro wrestling. Because it's usually usually they intend, if there's going to be a finish like this, it's usually like a count out or like someone gets involved. Like there's usually a DQ. It's very rare that a person gets beat to the point where they can't keep continuing fighting, especially in a title match. Cause I think this is the first time my title has changed hands with this kind of finish. At least in recent memory. I can't think of any match, at least even in like the 90s, that this has happened before, where like someone got beat down to the point where they couldn't continue and the title changed hands. Like, if you can think of one, feel free to tell me, but I can't think of any.
I can't think of it at all.
Yeah, like, usually this is reserved for like, what do you call it? Grudge matches, tag team feuds, like, anything that has no title, this is an okay finish. But for a title to change hands from a referee stoppage, this is like unheard of. But it makes sense because he did beat him. Like technically, he didn't have to get him 1-2-3. I mean, this is like a TKO finish. So I mean, the titles change hands for TKO finishes, right? Like in boxing and in UFC, I know they do because I've seen it happen. But in wrestling, it doesn't happen that often. So when it happened, a lot of people were shocked that it could happen. But from a sports entertainment point of view, like, if this is supposed to be a sports event that you're watching, it makes all the sense.
And it was really unique, and, I mean, Sammy didn't look weak, he just looked like he got hit with a bad shot, and somebody just capitalized on that and kept giving that same bad shot over and over again. Like, assumption is, had that one powerbomb not gone so viciously, Sammy wouldn't have been dazed the way that he was, and he just kept on hitting it. And let's also give a little bit of props extra to Kevin Owens for that swanton. Whoa.
That swanton, though.
That was so smoothly done. Like,
yeah.
Like, Brock Lesnar, when he did the shooting star, like, from the very beginning, like, he looked out of place up there.
And right. You know, like, this won't end well.
This is going to go badly. And then, like, he broke his neck, and you're all like, that's pretty much what I thought was going to happen.
Yeah, yeah, like expected, because...
Everything. He goes up there, and I'm like, oh, Kevin Owens is going to do something cool. Like he's given me that trust that he can do something crazy, because his first match in WWE, he flies out of the ring with a flying sabot. Like,
yeah.
So I expect him to be able to do this, and he delivers a better swanton than Jeff Hardy ever did. I'll tell you that right there.
Yeah, and for a guy his size, like he moves pretty fast in that ring. He's kind of like, remember when Husky Harris first appeared in NXT, and me and you were both saying, like, you know, for a guy his size, he moves pretty fast. Yeah, he has a very smooth, crisp movement for him for his size. It's kind of like Brock. Brock shouldn't move the way he does. Like, oh, yeah, I mean, Brock, that's a big boy.
But I mean, like, Brock is...
He's all muscle, and yeah, so it makes sense that he moves that crisp, because you can tell he's put his body, you know, he's worked his body to the point where you can tell he can do that. But someone like Owens or even Husky Harris, like, when you see them move like that, you're like, oh my god, like, how did that even happen? So... But yeah, I mean, I have no problem with how the match finished. I know
really unique, very cool finish.
Yeah, when I was on Twitter, I pretty much told, you know, I think I posted something like, that's how you do a finish like that, you know, because you're not taking away anything from Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn never stopped trying, right? Like, that's his character, so that he doesn't give up, right? Like, it's kind of like how John Cena matches go sometimes, like, oh, he never gives up, blah, 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 but he has given up, right? Like, it's happened where he's tapped out or whatever, or gets pinned. Sami Zayn, in this case, never got pinned. He never gave up. Like, actually, the referee stopped for him.
Because I can't think.
Once in a while, it's very, very, I think it's happened, like, twice?
I mean, he's been pinned, sure, but I think can't remember him never tapping.
I think he's tapped, like, once or twice. Ever. Like, I'm trying to think. Was it Angle that he tapped out to? I mean, we're talking, like, beginning Cena.
Well,
like,
I mean, US, that would be,
I'm
like,
talking US champion Cena.
Like, No, yeah. I'm talking about since he became John Cena.
Right, since after
post JBL.
Yeah, post JBL.
Has he ever tapped? Not.
I don't think he has. I wish there was like a site that I could look at all the results.
You know what that means, son.
What's that?
Rusev has to make him tap.
Is that how we're going to build Rusev?
Absolutely.
Oh my
has
God.
To cement John Cena in the mid card by
making him tap.
By putting him in the accolade. And,
that's kind of a big a big deal.
And either he passes out a la like completely a la Bob Backlund.
Right.
Against the Iron Sheik, because it's the same fucking move. Like, you can call the accolade, but that shit's the camel clutch.
Yeah, that's the camel clutch.
or he taps while in it. But, like, since I can't think of a single time that he has, like, dude's gotta tap. Like, it... No, that's all there is to it. Like, I will be disappointed if he doesn't. It won't happen at Fastlane. That's a WrestleMania moment. So I think there'll be like a DQ loss or something shady's gonna happen, but
yeah.
At WrestleMania, John Cena by submission. I'm calling it.
So what about Fastlane? Because they're fighting at Fastlane, right?
Yeah, I think that has
you think that's gonna
has a screwy count out or
oh so WrestleMania is the actual match like they're gonna like they're not gonna finish unfinished business type thing. Okay.
Exactly.
So you think at WrestleMania you think that
John Cena will
taps
be
out to that
accolade.
Wow.
By Rusev.
That's kind of a big
that's
is
a,
that is that like the shocking moment of this year's WrestleMania? Like that's the Undertaker losing.
They're gonna chopper in that dude with the Just Say Yes shirt and the glasses, just for that moment, they're going to be like, all right, do you. Be ready.
Oh, my God, yeah. Like, he's like, why are we...
He's going to be sitting right
front
next
row.
To Ms. Girl, to, like, Angry Demon Ms. Girl, and both of them are just going to have shocked reactions. When John
as
Cena
long as long as they're
out.
Sitting relatively close to us and to Sign Guy, because I love Sign Guy. Like,
goddamn Sign Guy.
Yeah, fucking Red Cap.
By the way, Ricky just spoiled it. We're gonna have a surprise live episode from WrestleMania, but we will be there.
Anything, yeah. There is gonna be a WrestleMania episode. That's for damn sure.
I don't think anybody doubted that.
So WrestleMania's there's gonna be a WrestleMania podcast. What? I thought they weren't gonna cover it. They've only covered like every single pay per view ever since.
I thought that was gonna be the TNA lockdown episode. Yeah.
is that what happens the same month?
I
have no idea. Yeah, I have no idea.
I just know that's a TNA paper.
But anyway, okay, so you have to choose what was your match of the night.
My match of the night?
Yeah.
Like, of all of NXT TakeOver Rival?
Yep, the entire card.
Womp, 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 womp. That was my womp, womp of the night. My match of the night completely... ruled by the boss.
The boss.
The women's championship fatal four-way in which Sasha Banks cemented herself on the top of the NXT women's division. Everything about that match was perfection to me. I've watched that match three times.
Nice. If it wasn't for the absolutely shocking finish and the fact that Full Sail University apparently has marks in the crowd, that... I mean, The crowd at the Full Sail University, the way they reacted to Kevin Owens absolutely, like, just brutalizing Sami Zayn, the way they reacted to it sold that match for me. Like, I don't know where they got these people from. I don't know, like, if they don't know what's going on or if they're just, like, shocked at what was happening. I don't care. It's kind of like the Undertaker thing. Like, I know... Most of the people who were shocked because there were sparks. Like, they thought that it would never happen. But the way people reacted to the ending of Kevin Owens versus Sami Zayn, besides the fact that it had a great video package, it had great entrances, it had great match altogether in psychology, like, that's my match. Like, that's my match of the night. But that was the cherry on top, though. Like, those reactions at the end were absolutely priceless. So, yeah, for me, it's KO versus Sami Zayn. That's the match of the night. Like, if...
I can see that, and...
Yeah.
I can see that, but...
But that being said...
I was ready for the boss, man.
Yeah, Sasha Banks, that Fatal 4-Way was definitely the second place. Like, Finn Balor and Andrew Neville was also a good match, but... It wasn't nearly what that Fatal 4-Way was.
For me to say that this Fatal 4-Way is my match of the night isn't taking away a thing from any of the others. It's just showing how good that match was and how good the pay-per-view was to have three matches that all deserve match of the night status. Mm-hmm. Like,
absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Wow. For all
And another thing that must be said about NXT is, like, man, they know how to structure or book the pay-per-views. Like, every match in the order that they were put, except for maybe the tag team match, was relative to the quality of the match or, like, where it should be in the card. Like, if anything, there's only two matches that can be switched. That would be probably Hideo Itami and the tag match should probably be switched. Put that tag team title in the bottom of the card, go with Baron Corbin, then Hideo Itami, and the order is perfect. Like, every match is where it should be in the card, which is one of my main complaints from, like, WWE pay-per-views, that sometimes the matches don't make sense the way they have them in the card. They just don't make sense.
Sometimes.
Yeah, like, sometimes. I mean, they've had really good, I mean, I think Rumble was really good, and before that, what was the one before the Rumble? I can't remember.
Hell in a Cell?
TLC? Oh, was it Hell in a Cell? No. Hell in a Cell was like in October, wasn't it? Wasn't it TLC?
Oh, TLC, you're right.
Yeah, TLC. So TLC, you know, pretty decent order. But for the most part, they always kind of go, it's all over the place. I think this one, the way it looks right now, like, I'm just looking at it, and it looks absolutely perfect. And judging from how every match, how we reacted to them, I think it's appropriate.
Yeah, I mean, Hideo versus Tyler Breeze was the perfect show opener, because it was good enough to get you on your feet.
Yeah.
And even though the next two matches delivered a valley, the following three carried it right up.
Yeah, like, as soon as Finn, I mean, I was so hyped, like, the moment they were like, all right, we're going to have the Finn Balor versus Adrian Neville. I mean, I didn't even care about the last two matches. I was just like, yes, let's do this. Because I knew that Demon Balor was appearing.
Demon Balor.
Demon Balor. I love that that's a thing. Like, I thought they were going to explain it, but I didn't, I could not predict that. Demon Balor. I wonder if he was told that that's what they're doing, or if he just made that up on the fly.
I think he just randomly threw something out there.
You think he made it up on the fly? Because that's hilarious.
The fact that they didn't say anything in the commentary made me think that he said it on the fly, and like immediately afterwards, somebody was like producing in his ear, is like, what the fuck was that? Demon Balor? New moves?
Oh, man. Oh. Well, that works, though. I have no problem with this.
This show, there is talk of the resurrection of the Click.
Yep.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about that, Regan?
So for those that don't know about the Click initially, the original Click was that of, like, Triple H, Shawn Michaels, Kevin Nash, Scott Hall. And the
Sean
birth of
Waltman.
Was he part of the original Click?
Oh yeah, 1, 2, 3, absolutely.
So that's right, because it was five of them, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so the original Click, you know, was the thing like during the '90s, and you know everyone knows the infamous Click incident from Madison Square Garden, where Scott Hall and Kevin Nash were leaving to go to WCW. They broke kayfabe and came out during a match between, I think it was Shawn Michaels and Triple H, I think it was. And basically, what's that?
I said that curtain call, though.
Yeah, the curtain call. And they came out, and they hugged each other in the ring, and they had, like, this moment where, you know, they were being friends. But in reality, they were supposed to be playing, you know, that they were enemies. This is the 90s, mind you, early 90s, where wrestling was still kind of, like, still hidden away.
Still real to me, damn it.
Yeah, yeah, it was still real to a lot of people, you know, and, like, it was sold as a real product. Like, these were real wrestlers that were having real matches. But anyway, so the Clique was infamous for pretty much being kind of like the rulers of backstage back in the day, especially during mid-90s to late-90s WWE, and a little bit of WCW. Like, the theory has always been that the Clique manufactured the Monday Night Wars, and, like, they were sent over there to kind of, like, destroy from the inside, blah, blah, blah. Like, all this crazy things. But anyway, so the new Clique, apparently, Triple H, has handpicked some NXT wrestlers to become the new Clique. And those people are Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Finn Balor, and Hiroyo Tami. And you're probably thinking, like, wait, that has to be, like, a rumor, right? But there's a picture taken by Triple H himself as a selfie that has him doing the Clique, the little hands gesture. So that tells you a lot about what Triple H thinks of these wrestlers to be kind of like the new Clique, and how he's going to treat them, you know, going forward. And apparently there's reports of favoritism and all that. Like, apparently, what is it, Kevin Owens doesn't do the training drills, and he's kind of like, I don't want to do them.
He casually doesn't do the training.
Yeah. he's like, I'm not going to do them. And Tommy is kind of like, I'll do them, but he keeps to himself, so he's not, like, talking to the other wrestlers. Zayn, you know, is well-respected, because, I mean, he has been wrestling for, like, 13 years, so, like, and some of these training...
He's done so much training with them that, like, they've kind of developed a respect where it's like, okay, if he doesn't feel like it today, all right.
Yeah, it'd be like if The Undertaker was there, you know, kind of like, they wouldn't smash an Undertaker for doing, like, a training thing. Like, they'd be like, okay, cool, do you, Mark, whatever. Like, that's pretty much how it would probably go. Or even Cena. Cena nowadays, if he didn't want to do, like, a training thing or show up to, like, an early meeting, I'm pretty sure they would forgive him. Like, they wouldn't shit all over him for no reason, because he's fucking Cena. So Balor apparently is one that
is vocal.
He's vocally, like, against the training drills. But I mean, you look at someone like him, you look at his you look at Balor and you see how he performs and how he's been performing worldwide for so long that I can see why he'd be like, I don't have to do this. And obviously he's, like, in shape, like, and he's not a wrestler that goes out there, wrestles for 5 minutes, and already gets blown up. Like, he obviously he's got this under control.
But you know? It is kind of funny, because isn't it funny that Balor's the most vocal one against him, but he's the one that Triple H specifically named on his podcast with Stone Cold?
Mm-hmm.
He specifically went, he's like, some guys don't, you know, really want to train and learn the WWE style, just because they've been traveling the world. And it's like, well, guess what? You still need to learn the style.
Right.
Finn Balor looked at me and he's like, I never thought about all these cameras and everything. And I worked a lot with him to help him get those and everything. So,
yeah.
So it's kind of funny that, like, he was specifically kind of named that, like, he learned all sorts of new stuff and improved his game because of that. But he doesn't want to, you know, practice headlock takeover drills or something.
Right, yeah, something, yeah, whatever the training drills are. Because I'm sure the training drills are things that people who are not...
Pretty rudimentary.
Yeah, I'm sure they're, like, rudimentary drills. And, I mean, someone like Balor, someone like Zayn, someone like Owen, someone like Itami, I mean, all of them have been wrestling for so long. I mean, it'd be like saying, oh, Daniel Bryan, like, when he was brand new to NXT, and he had already been wrestling for so long, it'd be like telling him he had to do training drills. Like, we know that he's not become better ever since he joined the WWE. Like, he's been the same guy. If anything, he's only improved in his promo ability and his character ability. But his wrestling ability has been the same since he joined.
Yeah.
So I can see this. I mean, I'm sure there's some people that are probably going to... This is going to rub them the wrong way. Just like the real Clique...
Rubbed a lot of people the wrong way.
Yeah, it rubbed people the wrong way. Like, I can see that. But if anything, this is a good opportunity to make people, both marks and smarks alike, if people are going to start disliking these four gentlemen for being in the Clique, then bring them to the main roster as the new Clique / new Horsemen / new Evolutions. Give people a reason to hate them. Because most of these people are internet darlings. Like, these are the type of guys that most wrestling fans, no matter what they do, they're going to like them. If you're going to make everyone hate them, then give people a reason to hate them and then use it. Use it like you did with Edge. You've seen the story of Edge. Like, I'm sure you've seen even the documentary. Like, Edge was never supposed to become this big heel the way he did. It only happened because of the Matt Hardy issue with Lita. And it was like the universe aligned, like the stars were aligning in themselves. And fans were like, oh, fuck Edge, you know, like he took someone's girls. And like, it got under everyone's skins to the point where Edge was like, well, hell, let's make it an angle. Let's make people really hate me, you know? Feed the booze. So, I mean,
yeah.
Might as well, right?
I could definitely see that. I could definitely see that.
Yeah. And since we spoke of this, what do you think the whole click thing, what's the connection to the other piece of news we've heard that there's backstage frustration from the main roster towards NXT?
Oh, yes. A lot of the main roster doesn't like how they're being perceived as not being as good as the NXT developmental because they don't get the kind of time in their matches. They're mostly wrestling on Raws, and so unless you get a match at the pay-per-view, you're only getting 3 to 7 minutes, typically. Unless you're like a main event, and then you might get, you know, 10 to 12 minutes. Because WWE has gotten on this thing that they're terrified of multi-segment matches. Like, God forbid a commercial happens in the middle of a match.
Yeah, and I know some people criticize that, but I really don't see a problem with that.
And I get it that, you know, you think you're going to have people not still be interested in the match. But, like, that's what you got the WWE app for. Like, if somebody's really concerned about what's going on, what they missed during the commercial break, and you think that your fan isn't still going to be there and see what you show on that replay, just let them know and everything. It's like, we're going to be going to commercial, but you can fire up the WWE app and see all the action live on the on the app, because the app lets you see everything, like, still streaming.
Yeah, the second screen experience, or whatever they call it.
Yeah. There always is this complaint about, you know, Raw's 3 hours. God, it's so hard to do 3 hours instead of 2 hours. And I'm not, you know, undermining that, but with how little work is going into SmackDown, like, I see almost no work going into SmackDown's program. Right. And before we had a solid 2 hours of Raw and a solid 2 hours of SmackDown. Now we've got 3 okay hours of Raw and 2 nothing hours of SmackDown?
Yeah, like SmackDown is falling off, yeah.
This doesn't make sense to me. Yeah. So what they need to do is really, really drive it to where you see the whole aspect just raised up. I don't see how they have these complaints where the wrestlers are like, on TV, I can't have the long match that they have on NXT because, like, that show is just pretty much about the wrestling. There's very little story that they throw in.
Right.
The story they throw in is pretty much just repiecing what's already happened type thing.
Right.
So why not do the same thing? Okay, instead of having a 2 hour show with 6 5-minute matches, we'll have a 3 hour show with 6 10-minute matches.
Right, instead of like 2 hour squashes and shit.
Exactly. So instead, their process is a 2 hour show would have 6 5-minute matches, so our 3 hour show will have 9 5-minute matches.
Yeah.
Like, okay, 3 more matches I don't care about.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
matches that you have.
Make the matches worth it, yeah. And I think, and not only that, but I mean, there's also the problem of, like, there's certain things that they don't allow them to do. There's certain spots that, if they say, oh, we're gonna do a match like this, then, the road agents, I guess, would be the right term here, would be like, no, we want you to do this. So there's also, like, I guess, babying, so to speak, in the main roster, where they sort of want, they want to control everything to a point where it's not nearly as entertaining as, say, the NXT matches. And even, this is even outside of the pay-per-views, where they seem to have more freedom in what they do in a match. And especially, like, in the Divas division. Like, the Divas division in the main roster is a joke, an absolute joke, compared to the NXT women's division. And that's another thing. Like, one is called the Divas division, one is called the women's division. Which are you going to take more seriously?
Women's.
Right, like that's it's perception. Perception is reality, and like the perception right now that most of us have. Look, anyone that watches an NXT pay per view and then goes and watches Raw, or even an NXT a weekly NXT show, even the 1 hour NXT is 1 hour normally. That's all they do is 1 hour, and that 1 hour is more action packed and more cohesive than 2-3 hours of Raw. So they have to figure something out. Because even when the main roster is complaining, like when your actual roster is saying, how come the developmental is getting more out of being in developmental than we are in the main roster, then that's a problem. Main roster should be treated better. They should have more rights, so to speak. But, yeah. I don't know. Like, I believe it, though. Like, I believe, and this is from a Wrestling Observer, like, Dave Meltzer commented on it, and his comment on the message board is this. It says, the story is accurate, but it's inherent. It was the same thing in the OVW days, when Randy Orton, Brock Lesnar, and all the women down there. Mm-hmm. But not exactly, but similar. I get DMs, direct messages from people from the main roster always after those specials. It's a common frustration. The top NXT performers are frustrated. They aren't on the main roster making money. Then they will get more frustrated when they realize their dream. WWE guys are frustrated that they aren't having the matches guys in NXT are when they know if they can perform before 400 fans in longer matches, they can tear the house down. So it's they have a dual problem. They have the people in the main roster are complaining because they're making the money, but they're not having the matches they wish they had, and then the people in NXT are having the matches they have, but they're not making the money that they wish they were having. Like, it's this is a mess. So what's your take on all that?
I mean, I get it. There's not a guy on the main roster who, you know, wants to go down to NXT just so he can have a longer match. Like, that's definitely not happening. And there's not a guy on NXT who's like, no, I don't want to be reduced to 5 minute matches, so I don't want to go to Raw. Like every single guy on NXT wants to get there, and every guy who's on the main roster wants to stay there and, you know, move up the card there.
Right.
But I don't, my only take is kind of what I said before. I don't understand why the hesitance to give them what they want. They want to have bigger matches and really show why they deserve to be main roster, and the NXT guys shouldn't be claimed as the better show. So let them show it. Let them have the longer match.
Yeah.
And that's gonna alleviate all your problems. Like, what do we do to fill time? It's like Dragon Ball Z. Dragon Ball Z was based on the comic, and there were times where it would almost catch up in the anime with the comic book.
Right, that's why we had so much filler.
So they used filler. But most of their filler wasn't, like, the filler WWE is giving us right now to fill that third hour. So, like, let's say the 2 hours is, like, the canon original, and that third hour right now is the filler. The filler they're right. giving us right now is like the General Tao horseshit in the like
or Goku drive driver's license.
well, that's actually canon, but
is it really?
Yeah, that.
Oh
happened.
My god, that's horrible.
it was like a 2-page thing.
I feel the hell out of that.
Like, yeah, but that was like a bad case of filler. Yeah. The filler they should be giving us is like Goku versus Kid Buu. Fights. Right. Filler the fight so that the fight is more grandiose. Sure, people can say like, oh, blah, 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 Frieza said the planet was going to blow up and then they fought for 10 minutes. But who's watching those 10 episodes of Goku versus Frieza and not thinking they are wrecking shit and amazing? Right. Like, well, like, you're still being crazy.
You're still being entertained.
That's exactly. The main, I'm not being given bad writing. I'm being given an amazing match.
Yeah.
Give me amazing matches. Don't give me bad writing.
Yeah, because, like, in NXT, like, I'm not saying all the stories are great. I mean, some of the stories are kind of silly, and, you know, some of them don't care about. But they have such good matches that I don't care. I don't care if the story isn't, like, the best story.
Some of the stories are, like I still enjoy it. But some of the stories, for example, one of them is there's a woman who claims to be the princess of Staten Island who keeps being beaten up by another woman who wears blue pants. And is literally called Blue Pants. That's the whole story.
Yeah, that's the story.
There's nothing else to it. But you watch it and you're like, that was cool. Okay, that was fun. Yeah. Blue pants, blue pants, blue
pants. Exactly. Because it was a good match. Because in wrestling, matches
tell stories too.
Yeah, and a match can tell a better story than like the actual story that they're trying to tell. So if you have shitty matches, then, I mean, you're telling, if you have shitty matches and a shitty story, then, I mean, you're just doing everything wrong. Whereas if you do a shitty story, but you have great, like, four-star matches out of that story, then most people are going to forget that there was a bad story to begin with. Because they're going to be like, remember that one match? Because that's all you're going to remember is the match.
Let's give some credit to, like, The Undertaker to highlight that example. Undertaker took a gimmick where he was a walking zombie that, like, took souls and was
put him in an urn.
magically controlled by an urn.
Yeah.
And became the biggest and, like, best match-delivering, you know, superstar that WWE's ever seen. Like, top five guaranteed and everything, superstar status-wise.
Yeah.
So how can you not argue that in-ring's got a big portion of the story, too?
Right, exactly.
So that's my only argument on that. So before we close, we're going to do another match of the week going into the Wayback Machine. And this one, I wanted to give a little bit of a shout-out for this match to the newest announced inductee to the Hall of Fame of the WWE.
We're talking about Rikishi Fatu.
Rikishi got a lot of hate. A lot of people thrown out a lot of hate that he doesn't deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. Is he the most deserving man to go into the Hall of Fame? No. Absolutely not.
Does he deserve
to be in the Hall of Fame?
Yes.
I would say yes, and without question. And I'll say why. Rikishi, family-wise, you can't argue against him.
Right. I mean,
related to, you know, Offa,
I think they should just induct that whole family, to be honest.
Because that whole family's so wacky with family trees. Like, they're related to The Rock somewhere, but they don't really know how. Like, that's why Roman, whenever he does a promo, he doesn't say, you know, like, he says The Rock's family, but he won't be all like, but when he started listing family members, he's like, my father, Offa, Sika, my cousins, the Usos, like, blah, blah, blah. But, like, The Rock's just, like, in there somewhere, like, through High Chief Peter Maivia 5 generations ago or something.
Right.
But, like, how come that family didn't get inducted? How come the Von Erichs and the Harts got inducted as a family, but the Poffos?
The Harts got inducted as a family?
As a family.
Did they?
Yep.
So why are people complaining about Owen still?
So, because he should be inducted solo.
By himself, yeah.
Because Brett was solo and as the Hart family. I know, right? but why not? Why just Macho, and they refused his request? Because one of Macho's dying wishes was that the Poffo family be inducted. And he didn't want to go in by himself, and Lanny Poffo said he overturned that because the people and his memory deserve Macho Man in the Hall of Fame. And if Vince doesn't want, you know, the Poffos in there, so be it. Right. But I think it's pretty shitty that you would say the Poffa family don't deserve to be in there, but mm-hmm. the Von Erichs do, like, the Harts as a whole do. It's like, I'm sorry, like, two Harts truly mattered. Yeah. Like, as far as, like, having a Hall of Fame career all their own, like, purely. I mean, arguable, I could see British Bulldog, but, like, with his unfortunate end, it's got some, you know, sadness on being able to induct him. Solo, I mean, Neidhart, probably not a Hall of Fame solo career.
No.
Stuff like that.
Definitely not.
Yeah, exactly. So it was pretty much just Brett Owen, but the whole family winning. Same thing, I mean, such an unfortunate end on the Von Erichs and everything.
Right.
And then it would just be so difficult to induct all them. But at the same time, not only did Rikishi have a fantastic career, fantastic matches, multiple genres, like the Sultan, as well as the Rikishi character, and he did other gimmicks long
before that. Oh, yeah, he did a whole bunch of gimmicks before he did Rikishi.
And then Rikishi, like, completely changed the big man dynamic and everything, because, like, Rikishi Driver was pretty cool, but, I mean, like, bringing in family, bringing in Umaga, Eki, bringing in his children, the Usos, and, you know, his nephew, Roman Reigns, and all that kind of stuff. There's a lot of lineage that came from Rikishi and from Rikishi's time in, and this match and this promo, match of the old school match of the week, The Rock versus Rikishi at Survivor Series 2000.
I did it for The Rock.
I did it for the people.
Oh, man.
Because his whole promo and build-up of why he hit Stone Cold Steve Austin with a car, saying no Samoan man would be given a shot when there's a white man who could have that spot too, type thing. Like, they touched on that, and they touched on, like, how he wanted to, you know, bring him forward and everything. But The Rock didn't want it that way. Like, The Rock thought he was the best anyways. And so just this fight was a long time coming in. I mean, of course The Rock beat him, and he beat him handily. But but the match was a ton of fun, and it came of such a big turn, because this is Rikishi fresh off, you know, being with Grandmaster Sexay and Scotty Too Haughty and Too Cool, I think they were called, and the dancing and everything. And suddenly he jumped up to being, like, in Armageddon Hell in a Cell, six-man for the title, to I hit Stone Cold with the car, and Stone Cold beat the crap out of him, and then The Rock beat the crap out of him.
And that freaking fall, that spot where he falls on the truck on that six-man Hell in a Cell, like, that was a brutal, brutal spot.
Yeah. So, Rikishi, nothing but love for you. You just be in the Hall of Fame.
And before we go, though, like, let's go through, like, all his, like, achievements as a wrestler. Like, I mean, he's had two, three tag team title wins. He has, like, one intercontinental title reign. He's obviously going to the Hall of Fame. He's been Caribbean tag team champion once with Samu, who, same person that he did the Samoan SWAT team, I guess, was his first tag team. World Class Wrestling Association, he's been tag team champion there four times. Universal Wrestling Association, one tag title there. He was in some, I guess, Mexican Federation, Revolucion Lucha Libre, been the international, basically the IC championship there once. He's been ranked in the top 50 pro wrestler, like, in the Pro Wrestling Insider in 2010, actually in 2000, which probably was during the six-man Hell in a Cell.
Which definitely was the...
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's had a career since, like, the freaking 80s. You know, like, he's not someone who was just Rikishi, did the dancing, and that was it. Like, he had a whole career. I think the people who were... I think if they were inducting Solo, like, whatever his name is, Fatu, Solofa Fatu, I think it is. Like, if they were inducting Solofa Fatu into the Hall of Fame, people wouldn't be complaining. I think they're complaining because they're inducting Rikishi.
they're picturing only, like,
it's like Yokozuna. Yeah, it's like Yokozuna. Like, Yokozuna, that was one character. Granted, that was his most popular character. Same with Rikishi. That was his
Well, I mean, that's character. Why, because Rikishi is his WWE name. Like,
yeah.
Like, Kane, once he's inducted, he's going to be inducted as Kane. He's not going to be inducted as Glenn Jacobs. He's
yeah, there's no way in hell.
Isaac Yankum. Like,
yeah, there's no way in hell that they're going to induct
everything.
Him as Glenn Jacobs.
So, I mean, of course they're inducting him as his biggest thing. And I mean, even if you're looking and you're having backlash and you're like, oh, why is the dancing fat man who put his butt on people's faces in the Hall of Fame? It's like, cause you remember the dancing fat man who put his butt on people's faces, and really, you're gonna complain about a great career and great matches like Rikishi, but there wasn't this, like, crazy backlash against Coco B. fucking Ware? Like,
who arguably had a lesser career. Lesser career.
That is my argument against anyone who ever complains against anybody going into the Hall of Fame. I'm like, Coco Beware is there. Anybody can go in. Like,
yeah, Coco Beware was kind of a shitty character. And, I mean, that was his only...
That
I don't
was
remember
all
him
did,
being...
Was,
yeah, that's all he
the
did.
The Birdman, like...
Yeah. Yeah. That's fucking funny.
And,
right.
And I mean, I don't want to feel like I'm smashing Coco Beware, but I mean...
Oh, I'm smashing him.
It's Coco Beware, so whatever.
All right.
But thank you for joining us. Have a wonderful night. As always, you can catch us on Twitter at Cyan of Flame.
And you'll catch me on at Straw Hat Rican. And sometimes I'll be even doing live tweetcasts of pay-per-views if I have the time.
As will I. So we'll catch you back soon with our next episode. Thank you for joining us.